Hey friends, Bricky here with another episode of Adventures in Design. I've heard this a lot from people that one day, if they could just come up with the right idea, they would like to start their own business. They'd like to work for themselves, right? The American dream. Own your own business, build your own company. You know the deal. Not as glamorous as it sounds, but also not as complicated as people make it out to be. I think people are always waiting for this lightning in the bottle moment where all of a sudden, just this epiphany is going to strike them like a bolt of lightning, and they're going to go, aha, this is the business that I need to create. And one business that you can always look at creating is if you find a hole in the market, right? If there's a need for something, a demand for something, and it just doesn't exist, patch that hole. And now you've created a business. But that's kind of for the analytical business mind, right? That's kind of for the person that's just like, doesn't want to get emotional, doesn't want to get into it. They just want to go, people need electric chargers for their cars. I'm going to get into building electric chargers because that's the wave of the future where things are going. So it's not that you're necessarily passionate about the earth going green or electric vehicle charging. I don't know who is passionate about that, but you see that there's going to be a tremendous demand as the American motor companies switch over to EV vehicles with regulations like the state of California has passed. There's going to be a tremendous need to make sure that people can go out and charge their vehicles and get to where they're going when they're away from their home. Okay, that's one way of doing it. But the more emotional way, the more practical way, is to literally look at yourself, look at what you love, look at the way that you love it, and think to yourself, is this at all unique? Is there a way where my passion resonates different than what currently exists, but is a commonality with people that love things the way that I love things? And what I'm talking about are my friends Arthur and Riley from Classic Grit Baseball Club. And what they did, they didn't reinvent the wheel, but they reinvent the wheel for sort of themselves and just trusted the instinct that people love baseball the way that we love baseball. It's an American classic. It's a pastime. It's something that we were raised on. It's something that we enjoy. It's something that we're just completely obsessed with. But they also saw that there's lots of people just like themselves that love baseball, but don't identify with the packaging of the sport, with what the MLB churns out as logos and branding and just really, something that you probably wouldn't want to wear outside of your home team's arena. Not something you would want to wear to go to a concert or out to eat or wherever you got to go to live your life, to work, whatever it is that you do. That's not my business. But the business model is, how do people like us love baseball? How do people like us want to celebrate baseball? Let's create an apparel line that does that. How do we celebrate baseball? For the smart fan. For the fan that is fashion forward, wants a shirt that has a nice classic fit, but also graphics that just don't look like a 3D printer just threw up all over your breast. This is the way that I would tell you, if you're ever feeling like you want to work for yourself, you want to do your own thing, it doesn't have to be a full-time gig. It's not for these guys. They're both busy with a career and being in a very popular band. But it can be a passion project because it was birthed out of your passion, and you will be passionate about this project. So eventually, yeah, we hope that it gets to money and profitability, and it takes 3 years to build a business. We all know this, but out of the gate, you will be passionate about it. You will enjoy it. You will obsess over it, and you will find your tribe, because at the end of the day, we're not all so different than one another. We're pack animals. So a good way to start a business is think about the thing that you love the most and how can you help other people love it and share it the way that you do. It's episode 1414 of Adventures in Design with Classic Grit. Classic Grit, Arthur, Riley, welcome to Adventures in Design. How are you doing?
Doing great, thank you.
Yeah, solid. So this is what happened to me on the way here today. I'm like driving and I see like the beat up work truck, you know, like the
like that little tiny pickup truck that I don't even know where they sell them anymore. But somehow guys that, you know, do drywall or you know, general contracting have that little bitty mini pickup truck, right? Mm-hmm. It's beat to hell. It's got more tools in it than you could shake a stick at. But it's got the angel sticker on the back window. And it just made me happy because, like, that's what sports is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the guys working on a job, the little radio going, you know, like baseball happens way too long. Way too many games, in my estimation. You want to make it exciting? Take baseball down to 50 games. But because it is all throughout the summer and they do, you know, midday games, afternoon games, it's just kind of like this thing that you can like live your life around, you know. I mean, it would be pretty hard to be dead on a team and watch every minute of every game. That's possible when you're an NFL fan like myself.
Yeah.
But for baseball, that's pretty challenging. And like just seeing the work truck with like the sticker on the back of it, it just makes me think like, that is baseball. Like, yeah. You could have a radio going at a job site. You don't have to be seen it the entire time. And you could just kind of, like, live your life while it's existing in the background.
Background music is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love going to a game live. I think it's there's some sports that are awesome on TV that are horrible in a stadium. I love the NFL. I was a Buffalo Bills season ticket holder for 8 years. Would way rather watch it at home.
Oh, like, yeah.
Football is just so much better on TV with, you know, two guys telling you everything that's happening in between the plays. But, man, baseball, being inside the ballpark, hanging out there, the fact that every team all across America has same rituals during the game. Like, it is just such an amazing thing to go be a part of. So for two guys that were raised in, like, the punk rock and the music scene, how hard has it been to penetrate into the sports scene? Because on one hand, everybody knows who the Angels are out here. Everybody knows who the Dodgers are out here working with our two hometown teams. But that's such a big, wide net, and sports is just so everywhere that the cool thing about being a skateboarder in like the 80s or the 90s was when you went to a mall and a kid was wearing something like, that kid's a skateboarder. That kid could be my friend.
Yeah.
Sports is such a great net, huge net. Not everybody's wearing an Angels hat tonight as your friend. So how has it been for guys that are from a more intimate type of scene? How has it been taking your love of baseball and going after, like, you know, sports fans?
That's kind of the bonding factor that we wanted to build the brand on, is that niche where it's like you don't know going to hardcore shows or punk rock shows, being a skater, who also is into baseball, because not everyone wears a baseball cap, like you said.
Right.
So for Riley and I, we kind of put our heads together and we were like, we are the demographic. We're two guys you probably wouldn't think played, watch baseball. But when you dive into it, there's so many people that are just like us you don't know about. Just based off appearances, you wouldn't notice that you share a common bond with someone. And that's kind of what we tried to build the brand around, is influencing our roots in the music scene, in skating, with our love for baseball.
It's interesting to me because, like, as far as sports are branded, baseball's branded pretty well. Like, some of the other sports are far off. Like, if you took me to an NBA game, I'm like, go ahead, take a free t-shirt. I'm like, I'm good. Like, I don't even understand where the NBA is coming at, like, from a visual manner. But as I've gone out to baseball games, you know, at the pro level or lower, like, it's a pretty well-branded sport. So when you guys were looking for your entry point into, you know, obviously we love the sport. And if I'm hearing you right, Arthur, you want to, like, communicate with people that love the sport like you guys do, right? Like, is the goal of Classic Grit is not to catch every sports fan, but to catch the fans that you guys resonate with?
I think one of the big things that we talked about when we started the brand was, like, somewhere along the line, baseball kind of lost the plot as far as design goes.
Good point.
Vintage designs, baseball designs, I think, are objectively awesome.
Unbeatable.
And classic as fuck.
Yeah.
Yes.
Never tarnish.
And then you get into the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s, and, like, a lot of baseball merchandise started looking like somebody, like, was constructing something with clip art and forgot to close some layers or something. Like, it's just, like, scatterbrained and stuff that, for me personally, like, I would be embarrassed to wear outside of a stadium.
Yeah.
Well, you bring up a great point, Riley, is that and we've talked about this for years on the show now, the computer made it very easy to be a designer. Mm-hmm. And a lot of shitty, untalented people stepped into that position. And if I know anything about sports franchises, some of them are thrifty and will build an in-house team that they, oh, we can handle it, we can do our own thing. Mm-hmm. But the difference in that old classic, like beginning of, you know, like 1901, 1920, like that look, that's a draftsman at a table,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that is a skilled dude. And there was like, you know, think about 1920, 1940, 1950. There's maybe, I don't know, a few hundred people that do artwork as a professional. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to 2021, there's a few hundred thousand people or a few million people that do artwork. So like those dudes were so real. And like all of those monograms from back in the day, from
all hand drawn,
all yeah. hand drawn, like the old Negro League stuff, like all of that so stuff is untouchable. Mm-hmm. And that's why you see, like, you know, like buds of mine, like John Contino, taking that look and running with it, because it's a look that never goes out of
yeah.
style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for you guys, was that the entry point that you wanted to put the classic back into your favorite sport?
Yeah, for the most part. And beyond that, I think a lot of baseball merch is also printed on really poor fitting.
Yes.
And crappy feeling
yeah.
blanks.
Yeah.
So we wanted stuff that was comfortable, that paid homage to, you know, the vintage design aesthetic, and was just stuff that you wouldn't be afraid to wear to like a hardcore show.
Right.
Or a punk
right.
show.
Like, right.
I'm not going to wear my 2002 Angels shirt that has like trophies and like an exploding baseball and like metallic font. I'm not going to wear that to a hardcore show.
The merch item that always kind of like is kind of seduces me, but I've never once pulled the trigger on it, is you go to a sporting event, right? And in the arena, a jersey makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the colors are cool and the stitching and the patches, like the craftsmanship is like great.
Yeah.
But then you go, where am I ever going to wear this when I'm not here, right?
I'm an admitted collector of basketball jerseys who realized at some point, like, fuck, like I can't wear these anywhere. And I don't really need them. They just sit in my closet. So I sold them all.
Yeah, I do remember there was a moment in hardcore where basketball jerseys were like such a thing that the bands were actually making them themselves, mm-hmm. you know?
1996.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. H2O, Earth Crisis, like squeezing out those yeah. those jerseys.
Yeah.
But you'd also just see guys at show wearing like, you know, a Notre Dame jersey or something yeah. or another. But I think that more had to do with like, how do I let everybody know that I have tattoos on the top of my arms?
Right. Yeah.
Because we weren't from Generation Face Tattoo.
Right.
We kind of did it differently back then.
That's like the entry level tattoo now, right?
Oh, yeah. You start
straight to the face.
Start at the neck and work your way down, you know?
Yeah.
Start at your fingers and work your way up to your bicep. Like completely different than the way that we all started. But no, the jersey is a really interesting design piece because of the craftsmanship to it, you know, the stitching and all that stuff. But when you go back and look at the beginning of the sport and the old jerseys, the only thing that makes those look outdated is the materials that they use. Like those are fabrics that we would never use today. But other than that, like those looks still hold up.
Mm-hmm. There's actually a game this weekend at the Field of Dreams movie site. It's Yankees against the White Sox.
That's awesome.
And they're wearing those like throwback unis, and they're so
like flannel. It's like a billion degrees in Iowa right now. It's going to be pretty nice.
They look insane.
I have a quick baseball question for you guys. I know that the other day, the Angels did a doubleheader, which is just, in my mind, like as a football fan, it's like wild to think you could play two teams or two games in one day. Mm-hmm. But I was blown away that they played the Jays and then they played the Yankees. And I'm like, man, that second team has such a clear advantage over, like, I always thought when you did a doubleheader, you played the same team
twice.
It
was the Blue Jays both games.
It was?
Yeah.
I could have swore it was the second team afterwards.
No, that would be wild, though.
They flip-flopped.
How unfair would that be?
The first game got canceled against the Blue Jays in Florida. Is that where they were playing?
Yeah.
At their spring training site. So that was technically a Blue Jays home game. So the first game, Angels were the away team. Second game, Angels were the home team.
Because I was listening to like that in the background. I'm like, that sounds really unfair. Yeah. to like, you've already played a game, and now you play guys right off the bench.
Yeah.
Like, I know the Angels aren't making it into the playoffs, but that sounds really, really unfair.
Yeah.
So for you guys, when you started to design the brand, what was the initial go like from a design perspective? Like, were you looking to make lots of shirts were like classic designs that you could just sell over and over again as the years go on? Did you want to have some classics, but some things like we know out of the gate that this is a very specific shirt for a specific season? Like in your minds, like what's the perfect blend of having a product line?
The classic design you're saying, definitely. But we also want to interject like band merch. Like we want some shirts. Like the one I have on here is a Nails ripoff. So it's like you can tell this is a Nails tee, but we interjected some baseball into it.
And like your Metallica t-shirt.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we want to continue down that line where we'll do the classic designs where like you'll see we're doing some monogram designs now, which will have some like classic vintage feel to it. But then we're also working on some designs where they're more modern,
mm-hmm.
but they still have baseball elements to them.
So when you get into like something that's that like niche where you're taking baseball references, turn it into a Metallica design. Yeah. Does that like pop because it's so original and so out there? Or is that a very, very specific sports and music fan that we find?
It does pop, but the problem me and Riley ran into is baseball terminology is so soggy. Like,
yeah.
It's so hard for us to come up with things because there's not real cool terminology in the sport.
Yeah.
You also think about some crossover terms. Like when I was playing ball, if you were a gamer,
yeah.
you were somebody who came ready to play
yeah.
every day, yeah. every pitch, yeah. every out. And now it means a guy who plays Call of Duty with a yeah. headset on.
And now it's PewDiePie.
Sits in a chair. Yeah,
very different.
Or Grindr.
Grindr.
If you were a Grindr, that was a big compliment back in the day.
Oh, I don't understand why you guys aren't jumping on that one. No conflict there.
We've got a long list of stuff that we're just checking off. Like,
we want to try and take those terms back, but we're just not that level yet.
Yeah, you might get there. So the actual name, I hate doing this. I swear to you guys, I rarely ask people where they get the names for their studios or whatever. But is Classic Grit, is that a term that I'm not aware of or just something that you guys liked?
One of the hardest parts for us, like it took us over almost 2 years to land on a name because we kept running into trademark issues. Like we'd go as far as like put stuff into production and then get hit with like, hey, actually this is trademarked by so-and-so. So it was a constant like back and forth, and we loved Grit from the get-go. It was just like, what do you pair Grit with to make it kind of stand out and pop a bit?
Yeah.
And finally, one day we just landed. I said, Brian and I were just throwing names back and forth, texting each other. And it was like, what about Classic Grit? And both of us like, hey, we really like Classic Grit.
Does Grit have a context for baseball or just a word that you liked?
Grit has kind of replaced gamer or grinder mm-hmm. as a thing. I mean, it's overarching now. Like you see people mention grit in like fitness stuff or like just professional work.
Yeah.
It's just about resilience and determination. And I think, regardless of what you're into, you got to have some of that. You
sure.
got to have some grit. And then the classic aspect of it is like us nodding at those old vintage designs and wanting to bring back the classics.
The classic aspect also kind of goes into like that's your preference. Like for me, classic for me is the players I grew up watching in the mid 80s to like the late 90s. Like
yeah.
those are my classic gritty players.
Yeah.
But for someone that's a little older than me, maybe it's the 70s for them. So it's like you carry with you what your perception of grit is, and to you that's classic grit. Like, oh, back when I was a kid, it was David Eckstein was super gritty.
Yeah.
And it's like everyone has their own perception of it, but it all is the same.
Yeah. I typically don't ask people about their names because it's just the lame 101 interviewer question.
Yeah.
But the name feels so like authentically accurate to what you're doing that I was unaware. I'm like, is this just a baseball term that fell off the wagon and nobody says anymore, that you guys found in an old sports almanac yeah. or something like that? Because it just feels so genuine to the sport.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's that perfect name where like it feels like it's been there forever, but yeah. also you haven't heard it before.
That was the thing we landed on too, where it's like, what's the one thing you want your teammate more than anything else? And it's grit. Like you want the guy that's going to dive head first.
Yeah,
he's going to run full speed no matter how many outs there are, no matter what the score is. And it just made sense for us.
So where do you guys get into baseball in your personal lives? Like, were you, dad got you into it? Were you raised on it? Did you play? Like, what's your entry point into the sport?
For me, I mean, my earliest memories are of watching games with my dad.
What, like, teams?
Sitting on his lap watching the Angels and the Dodgers. He always had baseball on in the house, and if it wasn't on TV, it was Vin Scully calling Dodgers games. So it was just a part of my childhood, and I became obsessed with it. You know, some kids are obsessed with Star Wars or dinosaurs or whatever, but baseball was like everything to me. Like picking apart the stats on the back of baseball cards, like building little stadiums in my sandbox in the yard.
So you were hardcore.
Yeah, insane. And then started playing at five in T-ball, and then ended up playing a couple years in college, and then that was that for me. But
what position did you play?
Mostly a middle infielder, shortstop, and second base.
You still waiting to get drafted?
So yeah, I'm still waiting to get drafted. It's been 27 years, I think, now, I like, without a call.
So. I like your odds. I like your odds.
Trying. People need old guys that have knees and arms that don't work.
I think that shortstop is the, you know, the catcher is very underrated. Like, I don't think a lot of people think about, like, what a grind that job is and how much stress he has. And, like, obviously pitching is up there with being a quarterback. As like, it's all mental. It's all stress. You're the hero or you're the zero. Like, it's all on your shoulders. But when you get out of those two, like, isolated, like, positions, like, shortstop is such a hustle. I mean, that area that you're covering and what, like, you're a delegator, because there's these variables, right? Like, if this guy's not here, then it's my job. And so you're just like covering everybody else's shift. And I always think that, like, it's such an interesting spot, because there's a guy at every base, and then, like, but we need to throw another dude out there.
Yeah.
Like, did baseball start with shortstop, or was that something that evolved along the way? Because it seems like a make-believe position when you first look at the game. You're like, what's he doing?
Yeah.
Why is he standing there?
Yeah. That's the most athletic guy in the field, right?
Yeah, except for when I was playing there. but yeah, like, it's where you put your athlete, and you'll see a lot of guys get drafted at shortstop, and then they'll move to other positions just because it's like, that guy's at short. He can pick it, and he's got wheels, and he can hit. And
yeah,
he's the most athletic and well-rounded dude on the field.
Like in college football, you know, like a lot of guys that can – play quarterback at that level will get drafted and switch over to like a wide receiver or something like that. You know, like, you have to have insane athleticism to be in those type of positions, which means, you know, unfortunately for everybody else, you can play a lot of other positions out on the field. But that, growing up with, like, you know, your dad watching on TV or having that radio playing in the background, I wonder if kids today, because radio is like so antiquated, I wonder if kids today know that vibe, because I definitely know just the sound of like a baseball game on while my dad was like tinkering around or being in the car and listening to it. And it's such a skill set to understand how to listen to sports on a radio. Like, you really have to get your mind trained to like listening to what they're saying. And, you know, I talk for a living. But oh my God, that is such a talent to be able to watch the game, verbalize everything, go over to the stats, talk about, you know, hey, you know, you may not know this, Mike, but that guy who's raised in Tennessee, and you know, you know, bases loaded, like immediately pop back over to the game and then fall back on something. Just keep filling up that space the whole time.
I was never really a Dodger fan, but I love listening to Dodger games because of Vin Scully, of that talent he had, where it's like he could storytell as well as call the game. Like, it was just like poetry, just listening to him call games.
Well, growing up in a city in Louisville, Kentucky, where we don't have any pro sports, you're kind of always like, what's your identity? You know, and a lot like you, when I was a kid, I had the baseball cards. I had every team's little, you know, the little batting helmet you get the soft serve in.
Oh, yeah.
Had all of those on a shelf, you know. My stepmom and dad really, really loved watching baseball. I played a little bit. It wasn't fucking good at all, but I played a little bit. But living in Louisville, we didn't have a home team, so it wasn't like, you know, the big decision was like, am I an Angels or a Dodgers guy? But it was more like, do you skew to the Cubs or the Braves?
Oh, the Braves.
Because of TBS down in Atlanta and WGN up in Chicago. Those were the two teams where every game was telecast. And, you know, Louisville has an insane amount of heat and humidity. It's just brutal in the summer. And I literally remember watching Cubs games, waiting for the heat to break so we could go skateboarding. And just like, so hearing, you know, Harry Carey and Steve call the games was just like such a part of my childhood.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, I didn't watch every game, but if there was one on, I would get drawn into it, you know, and watch it go down. But that whole like aesthetic, it's just so uniquely like America, right? Like the whole aesthetic of baseball and the monograms, the colors that they use. And this is something, you know, that gray that they use in uniforms?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that gray only exists in professional sports. Like, do you see that gray anywhere else out in the other than like a car that's bondoed, like, that's like getting ready to get painted? I don't know that you see that color anywhere else.
Yeah.
So what about you, Art? Where was your entry point into it? Did your old man get you into it? Did you play?
My old man's a big baseball guy, so for me it was like watching baseball games with him.
What was his team?
He's been a Dodgers guy.
Okay.
So for me it was proximity-wise, being right by the stadium. I would go to a lot of Angel games, so I became an Angel fan pretty early on. And started playing, same thing as Riley, at like age 5. And then played all the way up to high school. High school I got a little bit too much into skateboarding and music, to where I stopped playing baseball.
Because it wasn't cool.
It wasn't cool, so I dropped off. And then, now I'm here.
Well, that's an interesting thing, because like I grew up baseball, obviously got into skateboarding and punk. Mm. Fuck being a jock. I don't want to be any of that. But there's this weird thing where like people that were raised on like punk and hardcore, somehow later in life, sports became cool again to me.
Yeah, totally.
And it's neat seeing a brand like yours where you understand like, this is something that we love. It's a part of our childhood. But how do we repackage it and brand it and make it cool again? And I think that is, from a guy who loves designing and pop culture, I think that's a very interesting challenge that you guys took on.
I think what we've kind of always told ourselves is that we are the demographic.
Mm-hmm.
Like whatever we design, whatever we put out, as long as it's something we would wear, we feel like we're going to hit the mark with our
fans. That's the rule.
That's the rule, yeah. If it's something that both of us look at, we're like, I'm not 100% on board with this, we just won't make it.
Is one of you guys the designer, or do you collaborate with people outside of the company?
We brainstorm, and then we collaborate with people outside of the company.
Got it.
My design skills are poor at best, but I can like mock something up kind of to a point where I can give it to somebody better.
You know how to speak the language.
Yeah, and kind of. And it's a lot like making music, where I can come up with parts on different instruments than just drums.
Yeah.
And then I give it to somebody who plays the guitar or plays keys, and they can really bring it to life. So that's what we do here too.
We're also so fortunate too. We have a lot of friends that are in the design world, a lot of friends that are artists, that we're able to just kind of like bounce ideas off of them. And then more often than not, they're like, hey, you want me to just do this? We're like, yeah, for sure. Like,
yeah,
let's collaborate on this.
But I like that the stuff that you guys do is so classic and like authentic to the sport's origin, that it's not like a lot of like, whoa, that's such an amazing design. It's like, well, of course that works. You know what I mean? Like that worked 100 years ago. It's going to like, it worked in 1920. It's going to work in 1920 or 2021, you know? Like, I love that that is in there. For you, being a professional musician, merchandise is like, it just comes and goes, just like cycles all the time. Every tour, every album, just like shirts, merch. Was it interesting for you to do something where it's not like the t-shirt is the means to like support a tour, where the t-shirt is the song, it is the album, it is the main thing going on? Like, how did that make you sort of switch your brain from a design perspective?
I've always been into kind of getting our merch dialed in on the band side, so having an opportunity to do it for a brand was super exciting. And going back to what you said about, you know, the overworked designs are the ones that kind of flop.
Yeah.
And then usually it's the basics. Like, I've found that with band merch too. Like, we'll get some amazing hand-drawn thing that we might think looks cool, but then we take it on the road and it doesn't sell. And then we just do a tee that has like basic Helvetica thrice across the front.
Says band
name.
And
it sells like fucking crazy. Yeah. And it makes no sense. And, you know, when we get a mock of that shirt, like, oh man, this is a little boring.
We paid somebody money to do this.
And then we take it on the road and it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, so learning that through band life, trying to bring that to Classic Grid a little bit, like, usually, I mean, keep it simple, stupid. It it works
absolutely
in merch, and it works in songwriting too.
Absolutely, it does.
You're just not chasing trends too. Like, there's stuff out there that's like trendy and cutting edge, but that's just not us. We're like you said, we're sticking to the classics.
Mm-hmm.
We're sticking to what we like as 40-year-old men. Like, our styles have adjusted a little bit with age.
But I like that. There's essentially there's two different kinds of design thoughts inside the company. There's the things that are sort of the parodies of the world that you come from that you mm-hmm. like, which nobody is doing stuff like that. And it's mm-hmm. like such an oddity. It's like, oh, that's cool that they married those two thoughts together. But then everything else hits that structure of it's more straight to the point. It's more basic. It's less colors than anything you would see at the pro shop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how we all dress. Right. Yeah. Like, it would be weird if I just like showed up one day and I had like a Bills t-shirt on with like, you know, a sleeve hit and all this stuff already. Like, what's going on, dude? Did somebody give you that shirt for your birthday and you feel bad not wearing it? Like, I think if you are a smart sports fan, it is really, really hard to support the team and still feel like yourself.
It is definitely. And that's one thing we mentioned too, is we want to stay as team neutral as possible, because that's kind of the problem you run into with merch, is like there's certain colors that are just team specific. And for us, we don't want to alienate any fan base. We want to do stuff where, like, if you're a baseball fan, these are all for you.
What about the shirts though that you guys did that paid tribute to the home teams? There's the cool Dodgers one
mm-hmm.
where you have the LA like snuck into the logo, and then there's the Angels one where you have the halo on the A in classic. That to me seems like a really good play too of like, these are the teams we're from.
Yeah.
Obviously, we were both raised around these teams. This is our version of that.
The Dodgers one we actually did because they won the World Series. We're like, hey, we need to do something for the Dodgers for winning the World Series. So that's where the Dodger design came out of. The Angel one, just we need to do an Angel one sooner or later.
I think it's like understanding our demographic. Like, we're a Southern California company, and a lot of the people that follow us are from Southern California. So it's kind of natural that one of those teams is their favorite team. And then, like Art said, like, just having the little nudge from the Dodgers winning the World Series and doing that tee, and then that tee blew up, made us think that doing an Angels one was the next logical progression.
Well, if you think about, you know, we are the demo, right? Like, you guys are. If you're going to go to a game, that's the shirt that you want to be wearing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a shirt that you feel like, I didn't have to compromise to show up and look like a fan of my sports team today.
Yeah.
So how big does it pop when you guys get players, professional players, to wear the shirts? Does that have like a lot of influence? Does it all of a sudden, do you start seeing the orders come in? Or are you that was cool, but it didn't move the needle? Like, which way does that go?
I guess it depends on who it is.
Yeah. And the timing.
To a certain extent. Yeah. And the timing. Like, Joe Kelly of the Dodgers has been super supportive, and wears our tees. Justin Turner as well.
That one had to move the needle, right?
Big time.
Oh,
yeah.
That helped out a lot.
And they were wearing it like on the field in interviews too, which is huge.
That's so awesome.
Just mind-blowing for us. Cause we would
did you know that was going
to
happen?
No, we had people forward it to us, be like, hey, this just happened. And both of us be like, whoa.
What?
I was watching the Grammys once, and Ringo Starr, fucking Beatle, is on the stage and he's wearing a blazer. And as the blazer kind of opens up, I look and I go, I've seen that t-shirt before. Holy shit, I designed that t-shirt that Ringo is wearing on the Grammys. And like, I just blew my mind that he was wearing a shirt that I designed for a record store in Minneapolis. Like, it blew my mind. But, you know, I don't make money off of that. It was just like my design ended up on a Beatle on the Grammys. But you guys having an active brand and a player of like, I mean, he was in his moment during that time.
Yeah.
And he's just out there ripping it on the field. Like, that's phenomenal.
Yeah. I think that plays into Riley's relationships. So I think, Riley, you and Joe are buddies, right?
Yeah. I've known Joe for several years, I guess. Not like super tight, but tight enough that we'll
talk. You meet him through music?
No, but he is actually a music guy. He used to go to shows. He's from out in the 909, and he used to come to Chain Reaction for shows. I guess he's an old school Thrice fan, but I met him through another baseball player, Mark Trumbo. They all work out with the same trainer in Newport Beach, and met Joe through that, and just stay in touch semi-regularly, but when we started the brand, I was like, oh, I got to send him some stuff. And it's never like, hey, dude, I'm sending you stuff. Can you send me photos?
Of course.
It's always just like, here's some stuff that we made.
See what happens.
See, that's the thing. Like, when you're from the scene and in the bands and stuff like that, like, you just kind of, there's like a gentleman's agreement of like, hey, I'm going to send you some stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you get some stuff and you go, oh, this is cool. They'd probably appreciate it if I, like, you know what I mean? But you don't have to ask. It's like, in fact, the guy who's pushing and asking, like, I ain't wearing this shirt for this.
Yeah.
Cause then
totally.
Because then, as the drummer in the band, you feel like, man, this guy's trying to take advantage of me. And that's, then it's no longer bro and fun, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like, oh, man, like, I know these guys are hustling. I really like the way this shirt looks. I'm going to wear that when I play tonight.
Yeah.
And they're like, awesome. He played in front of 5,000 people. That's amazing. Or on the field at Dodger Stadium, yeah, where everything is always on a camera and yeah, being simulcast somewhere. So that type of thing, you see that make the needle move.
That's huge for us.
That's
and
great.
I think the biggest compliment for that too is they'll come to us and say, hey, I really love the way the shirt looks and feels. So it's like, they're not wearing it because we're sending it to them. They're wearing it because they actually enjoy the design and the feel of the t-shirt, which is
awesome. Like some other guys, Trevor Williams, who pitches for the Mets, John Axford, who pitches for the Brewers, they've reached out and said, this stuff fits so well. I'm so sick of wearing crappy fitting team issued gear. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have stuff that fits. And like, if I'm doing my off season workouts and I don't want to like team up in the gym, I can wear this stuff and feel comfortable. And that's like the best compliment we can get.
Yeah. Because the t-shirts that you guys are supplying them with or selling to them, it's like what they would go pick up off of a rack. It just so happens to say something cool about, you know, their job and their identity. And obviously, you know, to get to that level, it's something that you have obsessed over since the age of five. And, you know, your whole life's revolved around. So it's such a good fit. So let me ask you guys this. Let's say you could pick a team that would come to you and be like, we want to collab. We need a little coolness in the merch department. Which team do you either think needs the most amount of help, or which team would you just love to get your hands on to like do some stuff with?
That's tough.
I feel like needs a lot of help. They're all on the same level. I think they all get their merch done by the same like supplier, to where like it's definitely gotten better than the last few years, but it's definitely not where it should be. So for us, I think we'd jump at the opportunity for any team.
Yeah, and there's no team that's general aesthetic is like so far off base that it wouldn't be something that we could work with, you know.
But I mean, you don't think the Colorado Rockies might need a call, or Diamondbacks, or you know, there's some ones out there that
just, some wild ones,
yeah, that don't have that like feel, you know. I mean, I think possibly the greatest sports logo of all time. I mean, all times, getting out of the monogram, because that's kind of that's a different category in my mind. But as far as a visual graphic, the old school Milwaukee Brewers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The catcher's mitt that most people never realize is an M sitting on top of a B with a baseball putting the hole in the B. Like, that is a masterful logo, the old Brewers.
It's classic. Can you believe they got rid of it for a good amount of time?
Yeah.
For something that was just, like, had no personality to it at all. It looked boring, like a beer can.
Yeah, boring-ass cursive M that you would see on, like, a Miller product. And, like, some hops, I guess. Like, cool hat, guy.
Hey, I had a fun fact going for me that, you know, obviously no pro team where I live, but every time we'd go out on tour or I'd go visit friends or family and I would get to go see a baseball game, every time I went to a game until last week when I went to the Angels, it was always that team versus the Brewers.
No way.
I don't know how it worked out that way, but I've seen them play like the Cubs. I've seen them play the Yankees. Like everywhere I've gone, I'm like, holy shit, it's a Brewers game again? Like I've accidentally seen them play like a lot of times and in every different stadium.
Yeah.
Like, they just follow me around. So as a kid, I always thought too that the Oakland A's had such a cool look because they looked more like a softball team than an MLB team.
The colors were insane. The green and yellow.
You can't beat
cool.
that green, that Kelly green.
And like, that team
with the,
too.
With the yellow, like the bright yellow next to it and the gray that they used.
That team was so exciting too. Like the Canseco, McGuire, Dave Stewart. Like you really can't beat that.
Yeah. I also thought that I remember being a kid, like there was just certain ones that you were drawn to. And the Padres was another one. Like is that's such a bold colorway as well. Yeah. And I remember watching a World Series when I was a kid, and the pitcher, Goose Gossage, got pulled out, and he was crying. And it was the first time I'd ever seen like a grown man cry. And I asked my old man, I'm like, why is he crying, Dad? I'm like, he's worked his whole life for this moment, and it didn't go the way that he wanted to, and they're making him pull out, and he wants to stay out there on the field and play. And I'm like, that's fucking crazy. If you're an athlete and you cry, everybody sees it on the World Series, you know? And I remember seeing him sitting over on the bench being frustrated with tears in his eyes. And like that moment resonated way more with me than like seeing the big earthquake that happened during the World Series as a kid. Like that just was one of those moments where I'm like, oh man, like these guys really love their job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to bite. You're not going to bite on a team that you'd love to get your hands on.
No, well, I think both of us are just fans of the sport. Like, I think I watch a lot of every team. Like, obviously, like, I'll watch my team 162 games a year, but I'll also watch other teams when, like, they're on before my team.
Mm-hmm.
So I watch probably in a given day 2 to 3 games a day.
How do you manage that and have your job and your check? Like, how do you manage all? Because it's like, I Beth understands that, you know, because the Bills games aren't on out here, and that's a whole hassle getting that, I've adopted the Rams because it really is nice having a team where you live. Like, that's really important. And I told my father-in-law, I said, look, man, because he's a diehard Bills fan, and I still love the Bills. I gave some of my best years to that organization, but I explained...
Those are hard years.
Those are hard years.
Scott Norwood.
They weren't the winning years.
Yeah.
I explained to my father-in-law, I said, hey, man, just so you know, when I go out to California, first team that lands in L.A., I'm getting recruited by them. I was really hoping for the Raiders because black and silver is like dialed in.
Yeah.
Best-looking team in sports. And it ended up being the Rams. And so, you know, I'm now part of the Rams organization. But man, oh, man, Beth gets 16 games, maybe a couple playoffs if we get lucky and then Goff choked. But she gets the 16 games. 160? Like, she would never go for that.
Work from home and technology's made it real easy. Like, I can throw a game on while I'm working during the day.
So you just have it chilling on, like, an iPad or, like...
Just I have a TV by my desk in my office and at home. So it's, like, a game's on there. Like, obviously, like, the later game, I'll watch on the regular in the TV in the living room. And then on my phone, too. I can follow stuff on my phone pretty quickly.
The phone is pretty gnarly.
Yeah,
the
phone
is crucial. I'm limited to following by phone. Just because I have two young kids, and if I put baseball on the TV, they're like, ah, Dad,
yeah,
again, baseball again.
See, I think that's a generational thing, because if my old man put baseball on the TV, I'm like, I guess we're watching baseball.
Yeah, right.
I'd never be like, yo, put SpongeBob on. He'd be like, get the hell out of here.
The other thing, too, is we're real quick to send each other anything that happens.
We'll be
like, yo, Ohtani just hit a 490-foot home run, or check out this Trey Turner slide. Like, we're real quick to send each other clips. Yeah.
And now with like technology, you can just feed each other that stuff back and forth. Hey friends, I hope you're enjoying this conversation with Classy Grit Baseball Club with Arthur and Riley. And even if you don't care about baseball, hopefully you can understand that this is kind of a conversation about taking something that you love, that's always been sort of a cornerstone of your life, and figuring out how you manifest that into a project, into a mission that will allow you to keep loving this thing more and to celebrate it more. And, you know, little asterisk there is whenever something starts to make you money, you can, you know, sort of legitimize the amount of effort that you're putting into it. So therefore, you know, if you got to go hang out with the boys or go see your friends or go do this or go do that, it's quote unquote a work thing because you've made baseball a place where you work. So you don't really want to go to the game tonight.
you got to go to the game tonight because it's good for the business. Look, man, I'm tired. I really don't want to go to Disneyland and film tonight, but I really have to go to Disneyland and film tonight. I got to go do a live stream at Disneyland. Oh, I just wish I could just stay at home with you and the dogs and have dinner and watch TV. But, you know, got to go out to the park, got to film, got to keep feeding YouTube. You get what I'm saying. You read between the lines. We have so much more conversation coming for each of you in part two of today's episode, which is available over at AID.network. Become a member of the Circle of Trust and you unlock the second part of today's episode and all episodes, as well as this is episode 1414. That means there's a whole lot of other conversations like this in a big old pile that you can dig through to find inspiration and good conversation to get you through your workday, where we all kind of go off the path sometimes, but at the end of the day, the goal is how do you turn your daydream and your day job? That's what I've helped hundreds of people do. That's what I want to help you do. Join us today at AID.network. Become a member of the Circle of Trust today, and let's start part two with Classic Grit.
I'm feeling a little bit fatigued right now. I might need to take a break for the second part of this podcast. I was hoping maybe the Rally Monkey could help us get to the second half.
I don't even know if that guy's come out yet this year.
Oh, man. That's one that I could wish that they would put back in the box.
Yeah.
Dude, when that monkey's just jumping up and down on the video board, I was like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And the merch component to that is a little bit wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The little, like, beanie babies or whatever.
Yeah.
Around the neck.
Yeah, that's supposed to be fierce. That's going to get us over the hump.
And you have to listen to a Disturbed song. Like, come on, man.
Hey, baseball's pretty metal, though, right? Like, as far as music they play, or is that...
It depends where you go. If you go to Oakland, yes. There's a corner in right field where, like, they'll make banners of each player. They'll do, like... Laureano, they made like a Ramon, but they did it in Metallica font.
Nice.
And they'll do like a Slayer one, like they'll headbang for guys.
That's cool.
They're really metal up there.
So if you were up to bat, what song would you play? Because I know that I would do the Fantasmic soundtrack from Disneyland so I could point the bat when points in the air.
There you go.
That'd be a deep dive. What about you? What says you?
We've actually asked ourselves this question before. I think I went with Ain't Talking About Love by Van Halen.
Oh, it's such a great song.
That's such a great riff in the beginning.
Such a great, like, it just sounds like a spaceship's landing.
Yeah.
On 4th of July, a friend of mine is riding his bike on the bike path there in Huntington Beach, right? And he's wearing a Van Halen shirt. And as he's passing a bike, this guy goes, cool shirt! And he gets ready to turn around and be like, fuck you! And as he turns around, it's Michael Anthony, like giving him a thumbs up.
He recognized him in this current day?
Yeah, yeah. He like looked back and goes, holy shit, it's Michael Anthony.
That's amazing.
And he's just like, of course, Michael Anthony would be riding his bike, see a Van Halen shirt, be like, cool shirt.
Yeah, right.
What about you? What would you come out to?
Mine would be Bleed by Meshuggah, just because it's heavy as hell.
Yeah.
It gets me fired up, but probably too fired up. Yeah. A bit too anxious.
Those guys that do the in-arena DJing, they must be so good at pulling out because they know exactly when to stop those songs. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when, like, if you go to a sport, like a suit, like, they can't play over the game. So they're just like, vroom. Like, just, I would love to see one of those guys, like, completely pull back.
Yeah.
Baseball, not as gnarly as other sports, but they're so good at, like, bringing it down on the drop of a dime. So as you guys move forward with the brand, what are the types of things that you want to get into that you haven't been able to explore yet? I mean, I know that it's pretty t-shirt centric. We've got some hats, a little bit of dipping into some jackets and outerwear. But I mean, because your sport's more of a summer sport, do you go hard into outerwear and stuff like that?
Yeah, because our season ends in October, so that's kind of like fleece jacket weather.
Right.
So we had the fortune of starting the brand August 2019. So our first actual collection drop March 2020, which just so happened to be right as the world shut down.
Perfect.
So our first like actual year, we're kind of like touch and go on everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of changed our business model, stopped doing collections, started doing monthly drops, which actually it ended up working out really well for us. So year one, we kind of got like, hey, this is what works, this is what doesn't work. So this is year two, is our first actual year where we're going to like plan things out and actually be able to come through on them. So we do have some plans for October. We're going to do some fleece, some outerwear. And I think beyond that, this last year we did a bat art show too.
I was going to talk to you about that, the Goodwood show.
Yes. So again, us being lucky enough to know musicians and artists. We were able to get Trinity Bat Company here in Fullerton to give us 20 bats. We gave them out to different friends. And at the time, still in the pandemic, we wanted to give to a charity. So we gave to...
To Neva. Which was a organization set up to help keep small venues open that were struggling.
Yeah, I loved over on your Instagram that you would post a photo, you know, Jay Weinberg, Jordan Buckley, Derek Baker. You'd post what it was, and then you would tag it for a different venue.
Yeah.
And being an old road dog, I was like,
yeah,
oh, this is great. This is great.
I was trying to find a classic one for each city that the artist was from.
But that was really cool, and that was kind of our first taste in something. And for us, it was like bringing something outside element to baseball, where like there's these wood bats. They're a great medium for people to kind of express their artwork. And like we had some insane bats come back.
Yeah.
What was his name that turned into a nunchuck?